All right.
Go ahead.
What's up? This is Movies on Up. Have you ever felt like you're not human anymore? I'm Dave, joined by my human co-host, or is he, Mr. Ryan.
I feel like I am.
He's Ryan.
Or
I am.
Do I?
I am Dave. We are Movies on Up. Our tagline for this week, have you ever felt like you're not human anymore? If you know what movie that's from, hit us up, moviesonup@gmail.com, facebook.com/moviesonup, or the Twitter @moviesonup. If you are right and we pick you, you will be cursed with the infamous Movies on Up prize package. It'll get taken right to your house, werewolf metaphor. This week, some curse movie comes out.
The Curse of La Llorona.
Yeah, starring Linda Cardellini. It's a curse movie, like an exorcism movie, or like a, what's it called?
The James Wan movie.
Like a possession movie.
It's a ghost movie.
They all blend together to me. So we thought, let's do our favorite cursed movies. I kind of explained it last week. I don't really watch these kind of movies. And if I do, I don't know the difference between them. Like, I don't know The Curse of Emily Rose or The Curse of Molly Hartley or the Curse of the Paranormal ones. Like, I just don't, they all blend together. It's rare we do two lists, but we're doing two lists. Ryan's going to do maybe favorite cursed movies, and I'm going to do favorite cursed movies. So... So
figure out the difference there, folks.
Yeah, I'm going to do ones that were maybe actually cursed in real life.
For reals.
Yes.
Yeah, bad things happen.
Cursed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mine are more plot-driven curse, and I don't mean possessions. I mean actual put a hex on you, put a spell on you.
Okay.
It's not like...
So not Fallen.
No.
I love that movie.
It is really good, yeah. And I think that like... Maybe I'm putting too fine of a point on it, but possession movies, because I think we've done that.
I think we've done that. Yeah.
Yeah,
because we did The Possession of Molly Hartley and The Possession of
Emily Exorcism of Emily Rose and Fallen could have been on there, but we left it off because it's just amazing. And I think supersedes that genre. But mine are all legit cursed movies. Someone in this movie has been cursed. For better or worse, it's usually worse.
Okay.
Like my number five. Which is from 2000, directed by John Fawcett, starring Emily Perkins and Catherine Isabel. It's Ginger Snaps. Spoiler alert, I have only one werewolf movie on this list.
How many period movies?
Just one.
I love this movie.
It's a great movie. The Curse of the Werewolf. I wanted to put The Wolfman on the list, the Universal Monsters, because when I think of cursed movies, when the gypsy's telling him about the curse of the werewolf, like that's what I think of. By the curse of the moonlight. Like, it rhymes. It's real, like, it's awesome. And maybe I should have written it all down. But I could have easily done five werewolf movies. But we've done that several years ago at this point. In October, we did, like, sub-lists for our favorite vampires. Here's Ghost. Here's blah, blah, blah. And Werewolves was on there. And I'm sure Ginger Snaps was right in there because I like that a lot. I don't think somehow the Ginger Snaps gets a lot of run on this show for whatever reason.
For as much as we like it.
Yes. I did mention back in October how oftentimes filmmakers use monsters for an allegory for something.
Like a period.
Like a period, yeah.
Like a period piece.
Exactly. That's not lost here. That's werewolfism, lycanthropy, if you will, is very clearly a stand-in for the blossoming of a young woman. The titular Ginger is certainly going through some changes when she is attacked by a werewolf. And by the end of the movie, she... certainly is becoming more than just a woman. It launched a sequel, which was not really that good. Not bad.
The second one was okay.
The second one was okay.
The third one could do without.
Also a period piece.
That one was a period piece.
Yes,
that was
legit.
A double period piece.
Yeah. For me, it's the OG Ginger Snaps. It's Canadian horror in 2000 when I kind of feel like the U.S. horror had maybe taken a little bit of a dip. This one stuck in there. And
it just kind of snuck in.
Yeah.
Like Ginger Snaps, I just randomly saw and really liked it. It was like on one of the movie channels. And it's like, oh, okay, I'm into that. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of this because I guess I don't think a werewolf is a curse.
It's a curse.
More of a gift. But my number five, I went a couple of routes with this. When I first said cursed movies, I thought like, oh, movies that had trouble getting made.
Yeah.
You know, like Apocalypse Now dealing with the rain or Jaws tripling the budget because the fake shark isn't cooperating. So I thought that's where I was going to go. But then as I researched, I went very elsewhere. but I wanted to put at least one movie of that. And I put the one that we used to do news episodes weekly. And this movie kind of coincides with those news episodes.
Is it a Gavin O'Connor movie?
It is a Gavin O'Connor movie. Was a Lynn Ramsey movie.
But Once Upon a Time.
It is from probably, I didn't put the year, like 2015. Jane Got a Gun. Lynn Ramsey was directing with Michael Fassbender cast as the hero. Joel Edgerton brought on as the villain. Fassbender left due to scheduling conflicts with X-Men. They switched Edgerton to the hero and cast Jude Law as the villain.
But not so fast.
Right before filming, Lynn Ramsey left suddenly, right as filming was going to begin. Before she was replaced, Jude Law left because he signed on to work with Lynn Ramsey. A couple days later, Gavin O'Connor was hired. Then they hired Joel Edgerton and Gavin O'Connor's writing partner to rewrite the script and push back filming again for a bit. In that time, Bradley Cooper was brought in to replace Jude Law as the villain. And then Cooper eventually left because of conflicts with American Hustle. And he was replaced later by Ewan McGregor, who did really good.
He seemed like the natural choice all along to wear that mustache.
And it's one of those that, like, a lot of times when movies go through this much turmoil or this much trouble, it shows. The one constant in this was Natalie Portman, whose name wasn't even there because she was from the beginning to the end. It's a good movie. It's a really good movie. I think it kind of got brushed off because it became an afterthought because of everything else.
It's the movie that's never going to come out. So by the time it did, people were over it.
Yeah. And like this one, I felt like for that kind of cursed, I had to put on. Like, it came to mind. Like, even something like Ant-Man where, like, it goes. But then I thought, like, oh, now I'm just going through movies that have, like, switched directors. Like,
yeah.
Let's get a higher body count here. So. That was my number five, and then we get to the real curse.
My number four has a real, honest-to-God, gypsy curse. It is from 2009. It's Sam Raimi's Drag Me to Hell, starring Alison Lohman. Hey, there's that lady again. 2 out of 3 weeks, Alison Lohman
Same
makes it
Ewan
on
McGregor.
The podcast. Well, yeah, but I kind of feel like Ewan's more likely to make 2 out of 3 than
Wait
Alison Lohman.
Until I get
Lohman.
My White Oleander episode.
Right. She stars opposite Justin Long and a gypsy. This movie is always going to have a special place in my heart. As much as I loved the Spider-Man trilogy, it had been almost 20 years since the Evil Dead director had made a straight-up horror movie. And I could not have been more satisfied with the way this came out. It was vintage Raimi, darkly funny. The scene where she has to sacrifice her kitty, it's very sad, but it's darkly funny. The seance scene has all the spookiness and the kinetic energy that have become a trademark for Raimi. It was so great to see that he had been doing studio stuff, had not lost a step when it came to horror. This movie came out just after the 2008 recession, which made a really topical reason for Lohman's loan officer to get her gypsy curse, and her attempts to rid herself of the cursed button provide for a couple really fun turns in the third act. And you can't really do much better, in my opinion, in PG-13 horror than Drag Me to Hell. Occasionally we'll get something like Happy Death Day that's kind of right up there. But the rating of this movie, I forgot it was rated PG-13 because it didn't matter.
It's gory.
It's for PG-13,
it
is.
It's not Evil Dead, but it's a Sam Raimi horror movie.
It certainly is, and it doesn't feel like a dialed-down version of that. He just made a kick-ass horror movie, just happened to be rated PG-13.
Yeah, this is one, if I were doing that list, that would have come to mind. I love that movie.
It's a great movie.
I absolutely adore that movie. I love Lohman, though. I love Raimi. My number four, from 1968, it is Roman Polanski's Rosemary's Baby. Some of the bad luck that this had. Roman Polanski, married to Sharon Tate, really wanted her as the lead. She didn't get the lead.
Nope.
He was overruled by the producers, and they went with Mia Farrow. Sharon Tate still showed up in a background role. And then a year later was murdered by Manson family followers, who in Blood on the Wall wrote Helter Skelter. Helter Skelter, written by John Lennon, who 13 years later would be shot and killed in front of the building that was used for the exterior apartment shots in Rosemary's Baby. John Lennon was also really good friends with Mia Farrow, the composer of this movie.
Who did not get killed.
She did not get killed yet. Give me time. The composer, Christoph Kamadam, died a few months after completing work on the film. He fell from a cliff, went into a coma, and suffered before death, similar to the fate of the character Hutch in the movie. Mia Farrow didn't die, but was served divorce papers from Frankie Sinatra during filming, even though she was flying between New York and L.A. because he insisted they appear in a movie together. It just happened to be filming at the same time as this one. So that wasn't good enough for Sinatra, and he served her divorce papers. The author of the novel, his wife left him the year the movie was released. And then Roman Polanski went on to rape a 13-year-old, and producer Robert Evans maybe murdered somebody? Rosemary's Baby.
It's about a devil, baby. And a lot of people involved in the movie either raped other people or met with grisly ends. Weirdly enough, the guy that raped the child, he's still fine.
Sadly.
Yeah. My number three is a very appropriate movie to be on this list. There's another movie that probably would have made your list like the number five section of your list. It's a movie that we've talked about quite a bit, directed by David Robert Mitchell. So I put his actual curse movie as my number three. It is It Follows from 2014, starring Makeham Monroe, Keira Gilchrist, and Daniel Zavato. I actually believe, I mean, unless it's changed, which there's a very good possibility that it has, that Under the Silver Lake actually comes out this week.
Maybe.
Yes.
We'll see.
Yeah, maybe it does.
TBD.
Maybe it doesn't. But Mitchell's previous movie, It Follows, like I said, sticks more literally to my list. We never really find out what it is. We only know that
it's fucking.
Yes. It seems to be an entity that is passed from one partner to another after said fucking. The cursed partner is then relentlessly pursued until they are able to pass it on. Here's that A word again, whether it is an allegory for AIDS or STIs or just a creepy as hell movie, it works either way. Makeham Monroe had a hell of a 2014. It Follows, The Guest, both pod favorites. I'm going to say they're both horror movies, though Dave may argue with me on one of them. While I don't think anyone would call The Guest particularly original, the same cannot be said for It Follows. Mitchell did a great job of scaring the shit out of us, not by using creatures, but with creepy imagery and great filmmaking.
And boning. My number three, from 1982, directed by Steven Spielberg. directed by Tobe Hooper. It is Poltergeist. This is one of the more popular, I think, cursed theories. Just from people involved, these all died within the time frame of the trilogy releasing, Poltergeist through Poltergeist 3. Dominique Dunn, who was the older sister, she was murdered by her boyfriend shortly after the first one came out. Heather O'Rourke, who was the little girl, the little sister, she died of a random illness. She had previously gotten Crohn's disease and beat it, or it was misdiagnosed, and then she just died randomly. Julian Beck, he died of cancer. He was the villain in the second one, I believe, the evil reverend.
The old guy, yeah.
Yeah. Lou Perryman, he was just a construction guy on there, but he was murdered. Another one that was murdered. Will Sampson died of natural causes. He was the Indian. He's the one.
Or did he?
He's the one that performed an actual exorcism on set because they thought it was haunted. Richard Lawson, who was in it, was on a plane once, was recognized from this movie, so the stewardess bumped him up to first class. That plane later crashed, killing 27 people, including the entire row he was originally sitting in. He got recognized for Poltergeist, and it saved his life. And then Craig T. Nelson starred on Coach.
My number two does not feature Craig T. Nelson, but does.
Dauber?
No, does not feature Dauber, at least not that I know of. Does feature Naomi Watts, Martin Henderson, and David Dorfman in Gore Verbinski's The Ring from 2002. The Ring was the first in the J-horror run that movies like The Grudge and Pulse,
Dark Water,
yes, etc., yeah, allowed for those films to make their way over to the States for remakes of the Japanese movies early in the 2000s. This is the best. Even if you don't know that The Ring is the cursed videotape movie, I think you know the premise. I feel like it's almost an urban legend now, where kids nowadays, whether it's a videotape, which it probably isn't, who the hell can watch a VHS tape anymore, you know, a website or a YouTube video. It's almost like the Bloody Mary.
Mimu challenge. You don't have kids.
No.
The Mimu, it's a new thing. The Mimu challenge or something.
No, what the hell is that?
I don't know. It's like The Ring.
Fair enough. You see something, a week later you're dead. That's the premise of The Ring. If you don't know, now you know. Verbinski manages to slow play the plot, making this a slower burn than you would expect from a horror movie. But while he's dripping out plot details, the rest of the movie drips in this atmospheric horror that I loved about the Hammer films of the 50s and 60s. And while he's better known for directing Johnny Depp movies, between The Ring and A Cure for Wellness, Verbinski has shown the ability to direct a slow burn creep fest. I wouldn't call him a horror director, but I like the horror movies that he directs.
Cure for Wellness is great.
It kind of is, right?
It came out at, I get that and Autopsy of Jane Doe confused because they came out around the same time, and they're both just really underrated and surprisingly, like, really good.
It's Dane DeHaan.
Is he in both of them?
He's in A Cure for Wellness. Like, that's why that's really good, because he's awesome.
My number two is what's a lot of people consider the most cursed movie ever.
It's only your number two. You don't consider it the most cursed movie ever.
So buckle up, because we got a ride to go on from 1976's The Omen. Gregory Peck took the starring role in it as the guy who's raising the devil's son. Shortly after taking the role, his son shot himself in the head without a note. Peck decided to keep the job anyways. On his way overseas to start filming, his plane was struck by lightning, nearly crashing in the ocean. Okay, that's,
some might call that an omen.
Maybe, but then a few days later, the producer, Mace Neufeld's plane, also struck by lightning. So two people involved in the movie, their plane struck by lightning within a couple days. Maybe we're on to something. Speaking of planes, for the opening aerial shot of London, they had rented a plane to do it because we didn't have drones then.
Also struck by lightning.
The company that rented the plane changed planes last minute, and they swapped out. They gave them a smaller plane to use the bigger plane to transport a group of Japanese businessmen. That plane crashed, killing all of them. So they weren't in the movie, but that plane was supposed to be used for the movie, but the devil didn't switch the curse in time. The stuntman during the Rottweiler attack, when the dogs are attacking him, he was nearly killed. His padding was breaking off, and the dogs were not stopping when they were told. So he was injured during that. There was supposed to be a scene in the zoo where Damien deals with some big cats, some tigers. But in the training for that scene, the animal trainer, Sidney Bamford, got a little loosey-goosey with locking up one of the tigers, and the tiger killed her. So she died. And I don't believe that scene made the movie. Not the one of her
dying. The scene where the woman died?
Yeah. Mace Neufeld is back. The producer was staying at the Hilton Hotel in London during filming. Well, at the same time, the IRA was bombing the hotel. Not at the hotel at the time of the bombing, but that's where he was staying. That wasn't the only close brush with a bomb. A few days later, him and a couple of the other crew were on their way to a restaurant. On their way there, the IRA bombed that restaurant, and they just missed that explosion by minutes. And then the creepiest one of all, John Richardson, he was the Tom Savini of this movie. He was the effects guy. He did everything. There's a very memorable decapitation scene in this movie that was all him. He brought work home with him and got in a car accident a little bit later, and he was cut in half, which I guess is, I mean, the head's attached from the body just with the rest of it. But the creepiest thing is he was lying there dead with his body cut in half near where the body was a street sign for the nearest town, which was Ommen, Netherlands, O-M-M-E-N. And how far away was Ommen?
666 miles.
6.66 kilometers away.
Well, yeah, I guess it would have been kilometers, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so that's all the bad stuff from The Omen.
The bad omens.
Yeah.
From The Human. I feel some kind of responsibility to pull us out of this darkness, and I'm gonna do that with my number one. Had a lot of curses, and this movie does feature a curse. It's a prince was cursed to look like an animal and act as an animal would, and he would remain that
Speaking
way.
Speaking of the guest.
Remain that way unless he was able to win the true love of a young
Hermione.
Lady. Of Hermione. Yeah, it's Beauty and the Beast, but not the live-action one. We went old school with the 1991 animated film starring not Hermione, but Paige O'Hara, not Dan Stevens, but Robbie Benson, and Angela Lansbury.
Potts.
This is Potts. Yeah. Get another Ewan reference in this one? He was in the live-action one.
He was.
It is a tale as old as time. You don't need me to justify the cursed aspects of Beauty and the Beast, although I already tried. It certainly wasn't cursed at the box office. It made $425 million worldwide in 1991 dollars, which is still good for a top 275 movie all time. And domestically, it's in the top 175. It was also the first animated movie to win the Golden Globe for Best Motion Picture, Musical, or Comedy. And it was the first animated movie to be nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. Silence of the Lambs won that year, in case you're wondering. Since 1991, only Up and Toy Story 3 have been nominated for Best Picture, and had it not been for Beauty and the Beast and The Little Mermaid a couple years before, we probably don't have many of the great animated movies that we have today. It is not necessarily my favorite movie on this list, but I'd argue that it's probably the most significant, and by virtue of having a younger sister, it's the one I've seen the most by a wide margin. The werewolf stuff, those things all came to mind first, but when I really started thinking about other movies where somebody was cursed, of course, why not a Disney movie? Because every Disney movie, somebody gets cursed.
Could have put Major League on there. Serrano was cursed.
He was. Could hit the curveball.
Nope. My number one, we're going to lighten the mood. My number one is a comedy, and for the first time, I believe so, without research, for the first time
for the first time in forever.
In movies on up history.
Bitch was cursed too.
My number one movie is a movie that was never made. it is a screenplay called A Tuck, A-T-U-K. It is a hilarious laugh riot about an Eskimo moving to New York City, and it's a fish out of water, would you say?
I would.
Was made as a starring vehicle for John Belushi. Before filming could happen, guess what happened to John Belushi?
He was in a plane that was struck by lightning.
He died.
He died.
A couple years later, they had got Sam Kinison attached to the role. Who,
and he was in a plane struck by lightning.
After a lot of back and forth and some changes Sam Kinison wanted to make, they finally made the changes, and Sam Kinison was ready to do this movie. And then he died. This movie came back to life in 1994 when they had John Candy attached to star, who died. And then it sat dormant for a little bit until 1997 when Chris Farley was ready to take on this movie. And then he died. So, has yet to been made. Dan Fogler, call your agent.
Oh, shit. Somebody's got to be the Baker Mayfield, right? Somebody's got to break the curse.
Josh Gad, call your agent. Let's just knock them all out while we can. That's a tuck. It's one of those that it's kind of a legendary, never happened movie. It's like that Justice League Immortal, which that's my favorite movie ever that was never made. A Tuck is up there.
The Nick Cage Superman, that's
Death
a fun
Superman,
one.
Superman, yeah. There's a bunch of them, but like this is one of those I got to shoehorn in because it makes sense here.
It does.
Bad choice of timing for the actors.
I suppose, yeah.
I mean, Candy's the only one that was natural causes, like Belushi overdose, Kinison drunk drove. And
yeah, Farley OD'd.
OD'd, yeah. So that's mine. My also-rans, again, that was all from the original thing. Like It bounced around directors. Twilight Zone, people died.
Yeah.
Exorcist was just weird stuff. Back to the Future with the recast, what, 30 days
Stoltz,
into it?
Yeah.
Apocalypse Now, Jaws, and World War Z, because that was like a production hell. Do you have any also-ran curse movies?
Trek comes to mind. That was just my number one from last week, so I left it off. I already mentioned The Wolfman. Pet Sematary, very apropos.
Yeah.
You know, cursed burial ground there. Like I said, most of the Disney movies, Sleeping Beauty, Snow White, Frozen, those bitches are all cursed. The Monkey's Paw, the 1948 one, in fairness, that always works better as a short story than a movie. There's a lot of padding to get it out to, like, I want to say, like, 80 minutes or so. That's kind of a fun story there. And then I enjoy Wes Craven's Cursed. It's not great. They took out, speaking of...
That's another one that could have made the Cursed list.
Yeah, because it just didn't do so well either. They had Rick Baker, who was a classic special effects guy, and they decided that the budget was really ballooning, so they cut out all his work and replaced it with CGI werewolves, which just looks shit.
That one just seems like it took forever to come out.
It's got, I mean, I love
Greer sliding under the garage door with the finger.
Judy Greer's fun in that movie, Christina Ricci, Jesse Eisenberg too, Pacey's in it. It's just, it's really kick-ass, like, late 90s.
It's another time capsule movie.
Yeah, it is. But I love it. It's that kind of genre schlock, or specifically era schlock, that I enjoy. And I like me some werewolf movies too.
Next week, we're cursed with summer movie season coming up. So we're kind of in the thick of things now. Next week, even though it's mid-April, it's our summer movie preview because Avengers has to keep moving up and up every year. So we're going to have our summer preview next week, and then that follows with we'll do Avengers Infinity War for the release of Endgame. And then after that is our five-year, six-year, whatever, seven-year.
Yeah.
Some year anniversary.
It's seven.
Seven-year anniversary.
2012.
That's insane.
I know.
So that's the next couple of weeks. We always like doing the Marvel ones. Our preview episodes are more work than normal, but we still like them. It gives us a chance to talk about a bunch of stuff that we may
never talk
forget about or never talk about again. So it's going to be a fun few weeks, and then we get right into the summer season where there should be some good stuff coming up. I'm pretty excited about it. This is a fun time. I like the summer. I like summer movies and stuff, and especially now in the new climate where it's not dumb blockbuster season anymore. Like, you still get your blockbusters, but, you know, the days of Battleship, I think, are pretty much done. So that's exciting, and summer brings a lot more now. So I'm excited for that. We'll talk about what we're excited about. But next week, that's our summer preview. But until then,
keep it up.